What are the powers you need in the work? A sage said, Rabbi Yitzchak said, if a person will tell you, I have labored and found, and not found, and did not find, do not believe. I did not labor and did find, do not believe. I labored and found, do believe. We have to understand why they say believe. Are we talking about people who are telling lies here? After all, we're talking about people who are dealing with Torah, and certainly they're kosher people, they're honest people. Why would we think that they're lying? So what is this matter of believing or not believing? In order to understand that, we must first know what is labor. We've already talked about it many times, that labor is when a person has to do things that are against nature. Meaning, since we are born with a will to receive for ourselves, and in order for there to be adhesion and equivalence of form, because by that there is an ability for them to receive the delight and pleasure without there being a shame. Therefore, there was a correction that we have to do everything in order to bestow. Otherwise, we are in an open space, void, that is empty of light, which is called concealment and restriction, that we don't feel any holiness. When we work in self-love. That is why when we begin to work in order to bestow, which is against nature, it is called labor, because the body resists to it. Since every movement, when the body does not see that it is for itself, it opposes too vehemently. And we need great strength to overcome it. And here begins the work about which we said, I labored, or I did not labor. About that we asked, how can we say that if people come to you and say, I did not labor and found, do not believe. We're talking about people who have attained finding. And certainly those people are honest people. You can't say that they're lying, God forbid. So why would we say do not believe them, as though they're lying? But the truth is that they did give labor. So why do they say they did not? That we say about them that I did not labor and found. The answer is that when a person begins to enter the work of the soul, then the body begins to resist, and man begins to work through the remedies of Torah and Mitzvot in order for him to have the ability to overcome his evil and the aid that he needs to receive from Torah and Mitzvot. He sees the opposite that what he thought that every time that he would step forward every time and feel that it is not good to work for self-love. And he thinks that there already came the time when the evil would submit to him, and he believed that suddenly that feeling was given to him from above, and suddenly from this day on there will be no connection with the evil. And suddenly he sees that he's in a state of complete lowness, that he's immersed in self-love. And again, he feels a restriction and concealment from the purpose of creation, which is to delight his creatures. And although he believes that in order to attain that, we have to first attain the love of God, and he sees how he only loves himself. And about nullifying himself before God, and saying that there is no other authority in the world, but everything belongs to the Creator, and the lower does not count, the lower one does not count, that a person cannot agree with. That's why when a person gets a thought about nullifying himself before the Lord, the body stands against him and lets him understand, how do you want to nullify yourself before the Lord and have no reality of your own, but only the authority of the Creator, and you don't want to count at all? That is against nature. Since man, as long as he lives, he wants to exist and feel his essence, his being, and how can we tell him that he has to nullify himself and lose his entity? Then the body says that he doesn't agree to that. And this is called exile, meaning that the nations of the world in man are in authority over the Israel in him. As we know that Israel means Yashar El, meaning that a person does not want to be a reality of his own, but he wants to be nullified straight to God. As was in the exile in Egypt, that the Egyptians ruled Israel, and they could not exit their authority, as it says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. meaning that there's no way that a person by himself can have the strength to overcome the authority of the body, but the Creator himself can redeem them from that exile. Now there arises the question, if a person has put in a great effort and has gone through many situations of ups and downs, and many times he came to desperation, meaning he came to a decision that the matter of all your actions will be in order to bestow is not for him, but that belongs to people, to talented people, extraordinary people with great strength and courage. But he himself cannot come to that, and he's already decided that he should leave this campaign. And after that, he again received an awakening from above, until he had forgotten about his previous decision, and said that now I see that I'm on the horse already, and I can again come to a state of bestowal and exit self-love. Suddenly, he again drops from his degree. And there is also the matter of forgetfulness, meaning that he's already forgotten that he said before that he could attain the work of bestowal, and he doesn't think that there'll be another time when he'll fall from his degree. But he was certain that now he'll move forward, and now he sees that it is not as he thought, and he gets this thoughts and situation endlessly. Thus it turns out that when the Creator himself helps him and takes him out of exile, he doesn't know what to say, but he sees that on the one hand all the efforts that he gave did not bear any fruit, but he sees that within reason, if the Creator would not have helped him, he would have left the campaign ready, because many times he had thoughts like that. So how can he say I labored and found? He sees that with the labor he gained nothing, and that the fact that he attained finding was only because of God's help. That's why he says, I did not labor and find, meaning that the labor that he gave meant nothing. Now we'll understand the question, how we suspect him of saying a lie. It is simple. He says what he sees, and he sees that all his labor did not help him one bit. That's why he claims a true claim, I did not labor, meaning toward attaining the goal, he did not do anything, since from all the effort he gave, he remained in a state of lowness, even more lowness than he felt in the beginning of the work. Since at the time he began the work of his soul, he thought that he had a little bit of evil, and certainly he had the strength to overcome it, and he'll have the ability to work the work of his soul and not receive for himself. And what does he gain from the work and effort that he put in? That he attained he attained utter lowness. So how can he say I labored and found? It is the laboring that caused him to attain more evil and not find sanctity and enter holiness. So he knows that he is making a true claim, meaning that the argument is worth nothing. So certainly the labor is not a reason for the attainment. That's why he says, I did not labor and found. And he is not lying as he can see it. Now we can ask, why do they say they do not believe? He's telling the truth. Therefore, what we find in his words that is not truth, And for that reason, our sages said, do not believe. The thing is that there is no lack without a vessel, meaning there cannot be a satisfaction without a need. That is why when a person makes an effort, and he works hard in order to become a giver to the Creator, the more effort he gives, the more the desire awakens. Meaning, to the extent that he labors himself in order to attain the degree of bestowal, he sees that he is distanced from it. And who lets him understand that he is distanced from being a bestower? That is the work itself. It is like a person who would call a thief, and the thief wants to escape him. That's why if a person holds that thief, and the thief shows no resistance, a person doesn't have to put in a lot of effort to hold that thief. And if the thief begins to show signs of greater resistance, then a person too has to give more strength in order to hold the thief from running from under his hand. And if the thief shows greater strength than man has, and he sees that soon he'll escape him, then he begins to cry, help, help. It turns out, when does a person cry for help? Specifically, in a place where he cannot not save himself by himself. Then he begins to cry for help. Whereas if the thief is a small child and man caught him in his hand, it is not customary that he'll shout, "Help and help me." That stop this kid from running away from me because I don't have the strength to hold him because he wants to escape from me. Certainly everyone will laugh at him because it is not customary to ask for help in a place where a person can do something without any help from anyone. And that is because it is the order of the world. It is customary that there is no satisfaction without a need. That is why, since he doesn't have a need for help, that's why when he asks for help, needlessly everyone laughs at him, because it is not in the order of correction of creation. From that it turns out that when a person doesn't need people and he has livelihood and he asks for help to be supported, any person who sees him laughs at him, although he stands and asks for help. And we see that to the extent that he begs to be pitied, people who know him, that he doesn't need anything, laugh at him and give him nothing. Thus we can understand why when he says, "I did not labor and found," our sages say, "Do not believe." And as we explained, he is making a true argument. But as we explained, that we don't give satisfaction without a need. That is why a person must work and make an effort and obtain all the remedies in order to come to the degree that all your actions will be in order to bestow. And to the extent that he put in effort in the work, to that extent he becomes more needy of the Creator's help. Then when he has a vessel, meaning that need for the Creator's help, meaning that he sees no other way to have the ability to come to the degree of bestowal, then is the time that he receives help from above. And thus it turns out that they're both true. He must say, "I did not labor," meaning that his labor is worth nothing, because he sees that he did not gain anything from the labor he gave, but on the contrary, meaning that by the labor he gave, he came to realize that labor is worth nothing, meaning that you cannot attain with this labor anything. And he sees that within reason. And there's no believing above reason here that labor didn't help him. Only God did, since he sees that with his eye. Then we can say, "I did not labor and found." That's why he says to everyone that the labor is worth nothing. And he is telling the truth as he thinks it. And about him, I said to say, "Do not believe that he did not labor." That is because there is no light without a vessel. There's no satisfaction without a need. That's why we need the labor, which amplifies the need that he'll have for the Creator each time, for his help, until he gets a real need for the Creator, and a real need that the Creator knows what is the satisfaction of that need, that it'll be worthy of satisfaction. Then the Creator gives it to him. It thus turns out that if a person does not labor, there's no room for the Creator to give him the satisfaction. Because we see that the labor does have value, so much so that without it, there cannot be finding, because there's no satisfaction without a need. That's why they said, "I did not labor and found, do not believe." But there must be labor that gives him the need for the salvation of God. That's why when a person says, "I labored and did not find," they say, "Do not believe." Meaning if a person did labor and he had the need for God's satisfaction, the satisfaction from the Lord, certainly the Creator would have given him that satisfaction. But it must be that he did not labor enough to have enough need for the satisfaction. And when is that need completed? The Lord knows that. That is why a person must make a lot of efforts and not escape the campaign until God helps him. By that we understand the question that we asked: what powers does a man need in order to come to the degree of that all your actions will be in order to bestow? Should a person be great talented and with a great desire and courage, etc., meaning that we have to have great strength in everything when we're among people who are called higher than other people? As it says, "I labored and found, believe," meaning we need great strength. But that they said, "I did not labor and found, do not believe," meaning they don't that we don't need great strength and we don't need great talents, but only a desire, to have a desire to cleave to the Creator. Then God brings them closer without any effort and great strength. That a person who attains finding says, I did not labor. And he sees that this labor does not count, that man will have the greatest strength in the world. That will not help him. Because in order to attain the addition of God, cleavage with the Creator and exiting the authority of self-love, only the Creator can take him out of the authority of the vessels of reception of men. And it says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. And no strength in man will help him for that. But that we can interpret what it says, the Greek were gathered against me. Then in the days of the Hasmoneans, they broke down the walls of my tower and defiled all the oils. Since it's a matter of labor that we need in order to discover the need in us, and only then there is room to satisfy that need. That is why, in order to know exactly what we need, we can see that precisely at the time when a person wants to come near holiness, meaning to do, to have all your actions done in order to bestow, which is called Hasmoneans, whose job was to take holiness out of the authority of the shells, which are called the Greek. And precisely at the time when a person wants to draw near holiness, which is by faith above reason, then man finds the ideas of the Greek, which is the shell against faith. And then we see that all the Greek, before he began the work of bestowal, the Greek were not revealed. Then he sees all the Greek, that before he began the work of bestowal, the Greek were not revealed in man, and he thought that he had enough faith in God and had sufficient strength to observe Torah mitzvot and needed nothing more than to just do a lot of it. Whereas when he wants to be a Hasmonean, meaning that only holiness will rule the world, then the Greek, which is the shell against faith, gets more vehement each time. And it specifically wants to break down the walls of my tower. That faith is the wall. That the whole greatness depends on the extent of faith that man has in God. As it says in the Zohar about the words, her husband is known in the gates. Meaning that each and every one, according to what he assumes in his heart, that the matter of faith in God, each and every one has a different measure of faith in God. And as it turns out, not thus we can understand when the walls of my tower were broken, meaning that they saw that they had no faith, meaning that they couldn't go above reason, specifically at the time when they wanted to go into a work that is all bestowed. Then the Greeks were gathered around me, and we began to come thoughts of the Greek, who did not let us leave, but only what our minds necessitated, approved of. Whereas something that is against the mind, they stand vehemently against and not let it move even an inch. Then begins the labor, meaning precisely at the time when we begin to work the work of the soul. And then we see that a person cannot do anything against his nature, which is the will to receive for himself. That is why when God created that miracle, meaning that he helped them, then everyone saw that the whole work did not do anything for them, meaning that the whole work was for nothing, because they could not have conquered them. As it says, you place mighty in the hands of the weak, and the many in the hands of the few. Meaning that by nature and reason, there is no way that they could have won. Meaning that there they were few and weak. So they saw within reason that God helped them. And that comes to teach us that when God helps, we don't say, it doesn't mean that precisely that he can only help a hero, whereas he cannot help a weak person. Thus we can see what great strength and virtues we have to find in a person for God's help, for God to help him, to be able to draw near him. And in the way of the work, we say, you place heroes in the hands of the weak, meaning the strong thoughts and strong desires of the Greek in man, in the hands of Israel in man, which are weak in thoughts, which are not talented. And for them to be of great desire, to be able to overcome the desires of the nations of the world, they don't have that. and still you place the heroes in the hands of the weak. That is called a miracle, meaning that a person by himself cannot do it. He cannot overcome them. That comes to teach us that a person cannot say that he's not qualified to be to work the Lord in order to bestow, because he sees that he doesn't have the conditions to be qualified for that. That is why they show us that a person is not qualified to overcome his nature, even when a person is the greatest hero. But God is the giver of the help. As we said, I did not labor and found to not believe, meaning that finding the vessels of bestowal that is given by the Creator. This is as it is said, and a king is not saved by the multitude of the host of a host. A mighty man is not delivered by great strength. Behold, the eye of the Lord is toward them that fear him, toward them that wait for his mercy, to deliver their soul from death. Meaning, that the meaning of behold, the eye of the Lord, meaning that God is watches over those who wait for his mercy, meaning that they wait for the Lord to give them the mercy, meaning to give them their vessels of bestowal. Afterwards, Rav Baruch tells us about the process a person goes through. In that process, everything we do because we have to, because we are able to receive, delight and pleasure. And first of all, we get delight and pleasure from rest. He explains to us in the first part of the Talmud of Sefirot, in a reflection, that because the Creator is in complete rest, we too, in our source, everything that is in Him, we get that we perceive them as pleasure. If He is at rest, because He is at rest, we feel rest as something good to us. If you were in constant movement, then we would feel movement as something good. We would feel it as pleasure. That's why we make every movement only in order to attain rest. That's why our progress from the current situation, the worst situation, to the best, must be from rest to rest, from rest to rest. Each movement we make is a move out of necessity, that I feel so bad that I have to move. And that evil, that bad sensation that I feel, and the good sensation that I hope to get, the gap between them is the fuel for movement. Say now, I feel bad in 30 grams. In order to come to rest, I have to make a kilo of effort. So, of course, I'll not be able to move because I don't feel so bad. You know, sometimes I sit in some position. I know I'm not comfortable, but it's not uncomfortable enough to make me make a move until it accumulates. And I see that in the next situation, it will necessarily be much better. And it'll be much better than the effort that I have to put in. So I have a surplus. And then I can make the movement. That's how every will to receive is built. And over that, materializes everything. But everything works by the same software, same program. But the higher, the more developed the substance that dresses over that will receive its calculations. A more complicated, we don't know all the reasons for everything we do. Many things we do without noticing them. Calculations inside us are done even without our consciousness. Our beast just works without asking us what to do. In the vegetative and animate, in us and outside us, everything runs by that software. That substance itself calculates what is for its own good and what is for not, what is not. That's how all the laws of physics and chemistry work. All movements are either attraction or rejection. And only when we begin to work with desires of human size above our beastliness, everything works by the software. All the lower degrees and all the speaking in us begins to work not according to the software, but that software we have to attain from above. Here we have to add to the data, we have to add to the data from the upper world. When we attain the upper world, when we attain our next degrees, we'll be able to calculate correctly. If I could know my next degree, and how I can place myself in it, what I'll get from it, then I would take that knowledge versus the knowledge that we have in the present situation, deduct this from that, see that I attain, let's say, a kilo of pleasure in the next degree, whereas now I only have torments, maybe 30 grams or 40 grams. So in order to attain that kilo of pleasure, make some movements, prepare myself to tell my beast that it's good to work, to make this effort. Here begins the calculation that a person has to be involved in. Next degree is concealed, spirituality is concealed. I have to create such an image in front of me that my beast, my whole will to receive, will enable me to attain it, but it's concealed. So I have to attain some image of it somehow, to talk to me as though it's revealed. That's why Baruch writes that labor is when a person has to do things that are against nature. What does it mean, against nature? When I'm not in my beastliness, when I don't see that my situation is bad and the next situation is good, so much so that I have to run to it, or make a movement to attain it. And to make a movement to attain it, I have to do it without proof to the will to receive. That's why that act is called against nature. So then how can I do it? And here comes the matter of Greeks. Greek were gathered against me, that the Creator, in order to bring a person to the goal, he brings the Greek against him, and then a person feels bad, and from this trouble he wants to escape that trouble, and then he calculates not with how much the next degree is good, but how much the current degree is bad. But still, somehow we need to increase, to enlarge the next degree by society. How much spirituality is much better than our current situation. Here comes in the work of the Kohanim, which is a point that pulls us forward. And this whole matter of the ruin of the temple and Matityahu and his sons, we're not shown the evil in vain, but we do it because we discover the forces of sanctity that yearn for correction. Then there is a revelation of the breaking down of the walls of my tower. And because we don't have a choice, we wage war. We are forced to go into that war. Whereas previously I would not be able to do anything against social services, but now I do calculate that I don't have a choice in my present situation. If for my low desires, which are called the common people, a desire that is called Kohen, which is a desire for holiness, spirituality, and around that Kohen there are service people, they finally wage war and win because they have a greater spiritual degree. So of course they defeat the Greek, because the Greek are sent by the Creator in order to give us an ability to calculate that our current situation is bad and to exit from it to holiness. The Greek are only messengers from the Creator. It's not like they have a role except for bringing me closer to holiness. And then we come to a situation where we find holiness. We find that tin of oil, and around that we begin to build a degree of the temple. In those situations, there are certainly many ways for a person to hasten the development by the strength he gets from the group, from people around him, to go through his situation faster. It's not like we can jump over situations of the ruin of the temple and then the Greek, the sensation of the sorrow and the search of the point that pulls forward, called the great Kohen, the great priest. We can't avoid it, but we can hasten it. As he writes in instruction to Talmudus of Sirot, there are some places that the Creator places a person's hand on the good fortune. And he says, take this to yourself, meaning to find that the placing of the hand by the Creator in every situation, that should be our work. And how do we do it? He gives us a few tips. The first is, there's none else beside him, meaning to see that a person has to see the goal what happens to him and himself, that everything is turned by the Creator as one point, and then his action will be correct toward the purpose and not toward anything else. And that he should try in each and every point along the way to unify himself, what happens to him and what he thinks. That's the basis for our work. You can find it, and there's none else beside him. The more he tries to do it to the maximum, to that extent he hastens time of clarification, and then he makes another move. All those disturbances are then shown to him like help from above, without him finally coming to the calculation that I now feel bad and in the next situation I'll feel good, because from that we cannot make any movement. But if that calculation is above my current situation, my beast takes into consideration that what I consider will be that I will regard the goal as greater than my own reason. When I increase the goal, the next phase, in my own eyes, then I can make a movement. No one says that when a person loses his own mind and does something that is completely detached from anything, from calculation, by, you know, like someone told him something and he does something that is not clear to him, is not calculated, because it is not called attaining the next degree. Above reason is an act taken after a great calculation, but calculation that I acquire from the degree of the upper one, from the reason of the upper one. It is something that I have to utilize above my own beastliness. That's the matter of Hanukkah. Help from above, through the evil forces, the Greek, where the Greek are the forces of spiritual progress. Pharaoh is the beastly powers that show us the evil. In the beginning, Pharaoh is good. Afterwards, Pharaoh becomes bad. And that takes us out of Egypt. The 10 smites. That's how we come to beastly redemption. And then, when we receive the Torah, a little bit of illumination from above, and begin to conquer the land of Israel, and go into the land of Israel, and build the first temple. It is still all from above, that the temple is ruined, and from its ruins we have to make corrections, and we begin to discover spiritual disturbances, which are called the Greek. It is a progress over the broken vessels, spiritual vessels that broke in the first temple. And then we come to build the second temple. But that too is not enough to bring us to clarification and correction of all our material. That too needs to be destroyed. And after the second destruction, our substance comes to the joining together of Bina and Malchut, godliness and beastliness, that if after the time of exile and time of mixture we slowly come to building the third temple, then there is correction of the vessels of mercy and the vessels of wisdom, and we build the third temple, which is both Sag and both Ab, meaning vessels of mercy and of Chokhmah. So the third temple will be better than the first and the second temples, and that is what will finally give us the state of the end of correction. Baal Sulam writes many times in letters that the matter of amount is necessity, meaning in order to come out to a new situation, to make that calculation, that my movement toward the new situation is worthwhile in order to attain that situation, that in my eyes that new situation is better. Let's say I have 1,000 shekels now, and there's an object that I want to buy. That object has to be more important to me than those 1,000 shekels. So I have to make all the calculations. If I can calculate, I see a commercial. You should buy that object. They bring up the importance of that product, and then I suddenly realize that this is worth more than my 1,000 shekels. What do? They raise the importance of something that before I didn't regard as so important. It was before worth less than my effort. Now they make it, they make me feel that it's worth more than my effort. That's commercials. They dictate my thoughts, my calculation. This whole business of commercial that's developing so rapidly is in order to teach a person that environment, society chooses what he must think about. We have to learn from that, and against all the advertisement that we see, it is good for us to build our own commercials for ourselves, to have us impressed by what he tells us, that this advertisement will be that spirituality is more important than anything else. And the result of that we'll get even more enthusiasm than we get through television and radio. Even when you don't hear it, it works on you. Against that, we have to activate our own advertisement through our own society. How advertisement? I can't put through television, can't advertise it through television and radio, but we can do it from one person to the next. And I constantly work to be impressed with my friends. Then there'll be I'll get impressions. They have to make an effort in order to impress me. That's what he writes about. That to raise the importance of spirituality in the eyes of man is an act of publicity. Hanukkah is called the advertisement of a miracle. What miracle is there here? That we can do something, make an act, that before we couldn't. We thought it was when everything is based on substance, that action seemed completely unnatural. Unreasonable. A healthy person cannot do it. It's a crazy act. So what is a miracle? That we finally are turned in such a way, but not without your help. You have to help. you do these things in order to raise the importance of that thing to such an extent that you win. The fact that I don't want to listen to my friend, it is because the Greek are working on me. What happened then? Do you think Matityahu and his bunch fought against actual Greek? They fought against Jews who favored the Greek. Chesmonai fought against the Hellenists. Jerusalem of that time was beautiful. They had a hippodrome, they had everything. The Greek of that time were very realistic. Of course they had many gods and all that, but they didn't take them into consideration really. They thought everything was forces, but you know, it was a primitive religion. It didn't really obligate it to anything. They were very realistic, because that's why all the philosophy comes from Greek, ancient Greek. The war was not against the Greek, but against the Hellenists. It's a sign for us. You have to understand that the whole war is not with your friends, but it is with your inner Hellenists telling you your friends are worth nothing. Your friends are really the holy priests who want to pull you and say, come with us and let's kill the Greek. So the Greek inside you tell you that you don't want to hear them. You don't want to listen to them. The war is here. You can feel it. All the things that stop me from communicating, from bonding with another person, with my friend, a person who walks toward correction, his disturbances are either Egyptians, Pharaoh, or a Greek, Hellenist. The Egyptians are against cooperation in physical world, and the Greek are against cooperation in the spiritual world. When a person wants to do things by himself, it is simply that man's pride will bring him down. If a person wants to isolate himself from society and just seclude himself, again, it's a calculation that I calculate, that it's a calculation that I want to be in this list in order to attain something. Or that I think that society stops me on that way, on my way. They only annoy me, give me trouble. I'll be better off alone. If I sit in my own corner, I have books, I know what must be done. That precisely is the disturbance of the Greek. It's a problem to get something. That's why we're building this factory and these frameworks, that whether you like it or not, you have to give an account. You know, what are you doing this in the morning, at noon, in the evening? There's someone above you who demands. He doesn't ask you how you feel. He wants results. Did you do it or did you not do it? You had to give a lesson. You had to transfer something. You had to work with a computer. You had to manufacture something. Did you do it or not? So you do it whether you like it or not. You cannot escape society, at least on a beastly level. On a spiritual level, we'll build it after each person knows that this is where he works, actually works, and he's accustomed to working in it. He'll begin to ask, what is he working for? Because in his ordinary place of work, he earns money. Esteem from his family that he's providing for them. What do you get from this? You will be brought to situations you will be ashamed that you belong to this society called Nebuch. You'll be given such questions that you will have to really report to yourself why you are here in this factory. The work of the factory will force you to be here, and it will give you disturbances from above, making you ask why you have to be here. Just like toward the life before. Before you worked, you did things in this life, just like anyone. I got thoughts. What's the meaning of my life? What was I doing it for? I was living okay, but I felt that I do not want to make any money, do not want to work. But now, in our factory, in this life, I'll also have the same questions. What do I need it for? What do I get out of it? After we build a clear framework and begin to be in it, we'll begin to ask, for sure, why do I do it? And then that question will force you, will make you calculate, to raise the importance of the group, of the creator, of the work. The physical work in the factory, this everyday, this routine, will pull you toward questions that you will not be able to escape. And that will promote you each moment. That's why the ordinary actions of building the factory is that's how we forget about spirituality. Precisely because of that, you'll have questions about spirituality. But a person who doesn't obligate himself to the factory, say for example, the video department has an hour by hour plan, program, and each person has to report what he does every minute. So he begins to ask, what is this? Am I in prison? So the more the program and the regime is tougher, by that we'll feel pressed. We will have to answer to ourselves what we need it for. What is the meaning of our lives? That question will be right in front of us. And in a spiritual level, not a physical one. Over the spiritual work. Because all in all, you create something. Now it's different. What does a person do if he sees that his friends don't want to come in contact with him? He doesn't have to think. He shouldn't think that they don't want to contact me. What does it mean? They don't serve me. They don't want to listen to me. He has to try and think how I can make them feel good. I have to accommodate myself to them. That's the thing. There's no such thing that you can't bond with someone. All in all the disturbances are only out of each and every one of us. Those disturbances are disturbances of a Greek. They're artificial. We are at the end of correction. There's nothing but the and the correction. All the negative things that we feel that take us out of the end of correction to the lowest degree, they are the helping forces that the Creator is purposely hidden in order to put in us negative forces, negative desires, negative feelings over which we can come back to the end of correction. So if I feel or have an aim or desire that is incomplete, it is only because it is only as help from out of these forces, from these forces that hide infinity from me, to see everything negative, the positive in it. You can only do that by bonding with a source, with the Creator. The problem is that when just ordinary Orthodox people do it, they say thank God, they cry to the Creator, but that they rid themselves of all the trouble. You're like hanging in midair. Detached from the ground. We should not detach from the ground. We should connect those two ends, Malachut and Bina. That's why we have to see the Creator in our troubles in order to see Him as the reason for our troubles. And through Him and the reason, we have to see the purpose and the act toward the purpose. And this way I turn His turn to me, His plea to me, to a plea for me to Him. And that cycle completes the work. I have to work in order to make, in order to give. If I want to go above my will to receive, to resemble the Creator, that action must be done through labor. What does it mean? My will to receive doesn't agree to that. So, in order for the will to receive to agree to it, I have to have profit before me. Just like in corporal acts. I don't want to make a movement. You know, matter doesn't want to move from its initial point. From the moment of creation, even the first phase, after the root phase, is something that the Creator did. It is not something that matter chose to do. Substance never wants to make any movement. The Creator compels him to move. With what? With as much as there is will to receive in the substance. So I don't have a choice but to always find payment for my action that I will consider greater than the effort, than the labor. I can never, with my own substance, make an act if it is not justified. Just like you don't fuel a car, just like if you don't fuel a car, you can't expect it to go. Our body is the same. It must be fueled. You can see this fuel either as natural, meaning there's no such thing as natural, but there are things that I see them through my five senses, and I see them and I think, oh, that's worth it for me, that's worthwhile. And then I don't care about the movement because the satisfaction is greater than the effort. And I run to that satisfaction. But why do I run to it? Because the payment is greater than the effort. If it is less than the effort, I will not run to it. There are situations where we sleep and we feel bad, and still we don't move, or we sit and we feel bad and still don't move. You know, with kids, sometimes we're punishing them again and again and again, and they still don't learn. Why? Because there's not enough ferment accumulated. Say a mother wanted to be a doctor, and he doesn't see that it's worth his while. He wants to play outside and sit down and study and all that. There's no pleasure in that. Present pleasure. You have to bring the later closer to now. Same with us. There'll never be any action. Both the receive remains, just the aim changes. So in my five senses I see those satisfactions in my will to receive, in what is not shown to me. What is this world? This world is all the satisfactions that can be felt in my five senses that I can feel satisfy myself with. And then we have society, commercials, my inner traits. By all those, I calculate what is worth it for me, what is worthwhile. Only infants can move without calculation because they have an inner attribute which makes them move each time. That inner software makes a baby, an infant, move all the time because the Creator wants him to advance. Because the Creator wants him to promote himself, a child can run with no reason. The more a person grows, the more he should calculate what is worthwhile for him. And what do I do if it's not my mother forcing me to be a doctor, and she punishes me if I'm not studying hard? Does she raise the importance of being a doctor? No, she gives me trouble in this life. So the calculation is such that I see that I'd be better off studying. My father wanted me to be a musician. He kept taking me to films about composers and stuff. It didn't help in my case. I remember I had to take this heavy bag with notes. Kids were playing outside, and I was going to a music lesson. For me, I felt like I was going to prison. It was terrible. To calculate for something that is hidden is impossible completely. It is only by torment. If we go by torment, it is the way of torment, the way, path of pain. There is a path of Torah. What does that mean? Bring up the importance of being a doctor, and then you'll be able to make the same movements, but the movements themselves, you'll be happy about them, and you'll attain the good cause, the good goal. How do you do it? It's concealed from me. How do I do it? Of course, I want to be happy from now on, every step of the way. Studying this and studying that. Why? Because in each study, in each thing I learn, I see the great thing that I attain. The path toward the end of correction, the path itself begins to be a path of pleasure, a path of completeness, eternity. If we go by way of making the goal more important. But how will I do it if that part of being a doctor is concealed from me, and the part of being in the spiritual world beyond the barrier is concealed from me? How do I do it? And here only society can help. That's all. If it were not for society, you would not be able to attain the importance of being a Kabbalist, of being like the Creator. There's nothing in our world. You'll get some from the books, but it'll not give you the enthusiasm to be like that. They'll only awaken the basic desire in you. So I don't have a choice. Of course, the Creator from above will give me trouble, but to be promoted like that, path of pain. What we do in the factory, we are making the factory in order to compel us to ask, what is the meaning of our lives? And out of asking the meaning for the meaning of our lives, we hasten ourselves to come to necessity to increase the importance of our purpose. I'm making that factory to make the question, what is the meaning of our lives, not to come from the Creator, but to come from the framework that I built. By that, I promote my development more than the stick catches up with me from behind. If we work like that, you'll see yourself and your friends in constant high spirits. It will be a spiritual force in society. And the more we progress by necessity, we'll suddenly feel lack of strength and despair. Lack of strength is because the lack of the importance of the purpose. So suddenly I feel tired and I feel desperation. There's only one reason for that, though. The conditions. To building the publicity, that the commercials that will work on us, you can learn it from the outside world. See how they affect you. Television, radio, press, neighbors, relatives, whatever you need. Each and everything that you see around you is ultimately only advertisement. An advertisement of this world. And that's how you should look at the world around you. No matter what you see, what you see gives you an appreciation of what you see. That's called advertisement. Against that, you need artificially to build spiritual advertisement. What does it mean that we are a dissemination factory? It is advertisement. I lecture before 500 or 600 people. What am I doing? I came from an advertisement company called Neighborhood, and I want to advertise, I want to explain to you how much our product is good. There was one lecturer in the States that I asked them, what did you come here for? What did they say? They said they were looking for, they said that we felt bad, and we heard that we can find something good in Kabbalah. What does Balasan tell us? The same. what's the meaning of our lives? They should ask, what is the meaning of our lives? And I come to them, and I say, I have something for you. Do you want it? Buy it. I sell them the meaning of life. To be advertised by important or not important person. To have him advertised. Let me tell you, before in society, we had the concept of an important person until this time. But over the past 100 or 200 years, the scientist, the actor, the philosopher, no matter who, all the people that were once important, today everyone is considered selfish. They're not, no one is appreciated anymore. It is a recognition of evil. There's no such thing as an important person today. What important people do I see when I watch television? Heads of states in the past, or scientists, were regarded highly, but today there's no such thing. It is to show us that we have to measure importance not by attainments that those people attain by beastly attributes that they get from birth, that they get at birth, but by spiritual attributes. Spirituality will discover that only by real spiritual attainments a person will become wanted in society, desired, appreciated, esteemed. The importance of a friend is amplified by the advertisement of society. If our society begins to work, let's say that a person comes to me and tells me that this and that person did something great. Let's say that Itai here, for example, edited a whole movie in one day. See what great work he did. First of all, I didn't think he was capable of it. And it's not simple. And see how much effort he put into it. It's probably important to him. So whether I like it or not, I begin to view that person as more important. The next time I calculate with whom to come in contact with whom, who will take into consideration, so I'll consider him better than you. So you have to tell. That's why he who gives a gift to his friend must let him know. For every good thing that a person does, he must tell. He himself. Much less his boss at work. We have no other choice. Besides, the problem is that if we don't do such advertisement, you can't see people. Then you want to do everything by yourself. I'll just sit alone and work alone. Then they're not important. Then our society, even if there are 100 people here, you think that only 5 or 10 are actually acting. Those that shout more and do less. And you don't know people. you're weakened to the point where you think that only the power you have by yourself is for correction, and the rest of society you can just forget about. The question is, a good worker, should he know only what he does and should regard only that as important, or that he knows what happens in his department and it's important to him and how he fits in the department or the whole factory and everything? If I don't know what happens in all the factory, what the factory does, what the general purposes of the factory is, then I'm a part of that boat and I see what a great engine there is on that boat. If I don't know what the whole factory in general does, in all the channels that allow me to advance toward the goal, I'll not have the fuel. In order for a boat to go correctly, there has to be an engine. Its nose Its beak must be balanced. It must be balanced. There must be all sorts of systems, navigation systems. It's not like you push it and that's it. Each and everyone who participates can add. So every worker is good if he wants to be like the factory manager. Just like a good soldier is he wants to be the chief of staff. Otherwise, he's not getting any fuel from the hole. And then he makes sure that the whole factory works well, and he makes society larger, wider. The king can only be revealed as important to my beast. Why do you think I tell you that? In each lecture, we had 200, 300, 500 people, 1,500 people. In America, within 10 days, 10,000 people listen to me. From that, we get fuel. If you look at a movie about how we were received, what reception we got, when you feel low, you'll get a sensation of importance. That's advertisement, self-advertisement. We should constantly do it. Our factory is not only to advertise our media outwardly, the importance of Kabbalah and the topic itself, the issue itself, but that factory should also begin to work inwardly as advertisement. That's it. That's the other side of it. But for that we need two sides. We have to want that advertisement and do it. So I think we need to, first of all, begin to think. We have to build our own inner advertisement theorem. We have to know about how everyone works. We have how every department does its work, what the general plan is, and how everyone performs it. It's as though we're going back to the work of the factory, but within it you see that there can be spirituality dressed in such a way that it'll pull us along with the work. The whole wisdom is that through the routine of the work, that routine, though, necessarily necessitates the recognition of the importance of spirituality. Otherwise, we'll simply escape sideways, always. And to be better and better at this is our work. In 1 or 2 years from now, this mechanism will be so deep and you'll see that spiritual and physical acts will be mixed together in each and every one of us. We're saying that we have to advertise it. We talked about that. We have to advertise how each department, what it does. It has to really report what it really attained and build spirituality over that. Not just artificially, like you wanted to get together. From within our work, we have to. Baruch Salam writes that we have to start schools, establish schools, and publish it, and advertise it in the streets. Remember that part. So when we do it, we should get everything else as a result of that. Question: if I invest in a person and he becomes important to me because I invest in him, so everything he tells me will be important to me, say, like my child, even when he says nonsense, I'm impressed with it. When he wants something, I know it's nonsense, but because he's important to me, because I've invested my efforts in him, even when he asks for nonsense. But here, you relate it to something artificial. You invest in him, but is he important to you because he manufactures something or because he just sits here? If he's manufacturing, if he's showing himself as someone who works, and we can see his work in the factory, we can feel it, out of that you know that he really does work, then you invest in him. Otherwise you can invest in any person from outside and begin to be impressed with it and begin to do his will here. And then what? You have to get something in reward. What does it mean when I listen to someone? That he becomes important to me. How? Either I invest my effort in him, and then there's a part of me in him, and that part I relate to as important because I'm important to me. Or that he pays me, and then what he has is important to me, but there's still... But still he has something that I want, that is mine. So either he has money in his pocket that I want to have it, so to that extent he's important to me, or that I've invested in him and this way he became important to me. That's the way it goes in this world. And spirituality is the same. Either he has spirituality and I want that, and then he's important to me, or that I invest in him because I think he has spirituality and then he becomes important. But there still has to be some spirituality in him. He has to be a friend toward the goal. And that is determined by how much he's here and how much effort he makes. And that is determined not by the product. I relate to a person according to how much effort he puts in, not according to how much he produces, but to how much he tries, how hard he tries. I examine his desire and the effort he makes. That's the meaning of effort, labor, according to how much he tries. The person who tries, one person will make an act and will make an effort and just advance one step, and another person will make an effort and jump, I don't know, 1,000 miles. You don't just take a person and begin to invest in him. You have to see who you want to invest in. You have to see that person is worth investment. Same goes with the kitchen, right? They work very hard, but they don't have any movies come out of it. So although from their work there is no advertisement of Kabbalah, but his effort is such that his department should be more important to us than the most influencing department. You take a person into consideration according to his effort. You relate to a person according to his effort. A person who does a lot and doesn't tell about it, that's not good. He should try and get up and talk about himself, talk about everything that he does. Everyone knows about Avon. It's his character. He's a very close person. A character is a character, but he should say that this week he sold this and that much, and I did that much. He has to report. Out of that, we'll know that person is concerned. We know that he works, but it's not enough. He has to actually do it openly. Now there's another question. Maybe we'll regard him less. In society, that's what we have to do. On Shabbat, we have to, when we finish the lesson, we have to have a report from all the departments on the progress. Without it, society, our firm, will not be promoted. I have a plan every day, always. In large factories, if there's a malfunction for half a day, they know how much they've lost and how much time it'll take them to make up for that half a day. Why? Because it's important for them, their product. So each moment is important to them. When I worked in Russia, I earned, let's say, half a ruble. But the factory made 14 rubles on me. So I thought, okay, I can get off work for half a day. But the factory looks at it differently. we're not at work. The factory made 14 rubles on me each hour. So that's different. So we have to look at it from the Creator's point of view, perspective, how when we escape the work of corrections for the whole world for half a day or for a minute, we should think what the Creator thinks of it. Then we know what loss we bring to the world. And we know that the Creator punishes a person according to his degree.